The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon and welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community. Your host is Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. This hour is designed to inspire, inform, and to help you live better with cancer. Now, here's your host, Kim Tibaldo.
Welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer, an internet radio show that focuses on informing and inspiring people to live well with cancer. I am your guest host today, Linda House, the president of the Cancer Support Community, filling in for Kim Tibaldo, the CEO who is off today. The Wellness Community and Gilda's Club have united to become the Cancer Support Community, one of the largest providers of cancer support in the United States and around the world. Our services are now offered at more than 170 locations worldwide, online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org and via a telephone helpline at 888-793-9355. And we will repeat all of that information a little bit later in the show in case you didn't get a chance to write that down. Today, we are talking about estate planning. Estate planning, preparing a will, selecting a power of attorney, finalizing health care directives, all of these can be daunting tasks for anyone. But someone who is facing a cancer diagnosis, these preparations take on a whole new meaning and may take on a different level of urgency, not only for the patient, but for their loved ones. Not only can these be complicated and emotional topics to confront, but there is often a lot of legalese that can be confusing, especially if you haven't handled these types of documents before. It's an extra layer of knowledge that you have to have. On today's show, Financial Planning 101, as we like to call it, we're going to break down all of the legal documents that need to be considered during this time with one of our CSC family members, a social worker who deals with people living with cancer and their families on a daily basis, and also an attorney who not only has experience with this topic professionally, but personally as well. So joining us on today's show is a very personal friend of mine, Paul Pittman, who is an esteemed tax attorney in Indianapolis, Indiana, where he specializes in business advising, estate and trust administration and planning, real estate, and taxation. After years of operating in a multi-partner practice, Paul opened Pittman PC, an individual practice. Paul has extensive experience in his specialty areas, and he also has a personal journey that has played a role in his current work. And Paul is going to share with us his journey later in the show, and how he's using not only his expertise, but his personal journey to help patients and families deal with the issues that we're going to be speaking of today, such as healthcare directives, estate planning, living will, and power of attorney. Paul, thank you for joining us. We're so happy that you're here today to talk about this really important topic.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me on the show.
And we are also pleased to welcome back Clara Anderson Saint. Clara is the program director at Gilda's Club Kansas City, and as many of you know, Gilda's Club Kansas City is Cancer Support Community's affiliate in the Kansas City area. After growing up in rural Missouri, Clara moved to Kansas City to complete her master's degree in social work, and through professional and personal experiences, she discovered her passion for helping support those grieving with the death of a loved one and began working in the hospice setting. Then, after receiving her clinical social work license and a certificate in grief counseling, she became the program director at Gilda's Club Kansas City. Clara and her husband are parents to one child, and I think, Clara, the last time I had you on the show, it was just after you had little Olivia, so it's great to have you back again, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Linda. Happy to be back.
Paul, let's get started with you. I think it would really be beneficial if you could share with our listeners a bit about your story and how you find yourself doing what it is that you're doing today.
Sure. Approximately 10 years ago, just through a regular checkup, I was diagnosed with a melanoma near my abdomen. We had an outpatient surgery, and it was removed, and I was blessed there was no further treatment that was required. In September of 2011, that summer, I thought that I had a hemorrhoid issue as a result of bicycling, and through a specialist, we determined that I had stage 3 colorectal cancer. We did some further testing and was also diagnosed with thyroid cancer. So we laid out a game plan for both of those. We had radiation and chemotherapy to help reduce the tumor. We had two surgeries in January of that following year, which was followed up with some additional chemotherapy treatment and the radiation thyroid treatment as well. We did a final surgery to do a takedown on my colostomy that kind of hooked my plumbing back up. So the surgeries, the treatments went very well. I'm pleased to let everyone know that my energy is good, that I feel good, and I'm back at practice, back enjoying my family and friends with a new perspective on life.
And you're facing a 4-year anniversary soon.
We are coming up. It will be 4 years in January. I count my treatment, my cancer-free from my last treatment. I know the doctors look at it from the removal date, so I'm a little behind that schedule in my own mind. But nonetheless, we're moving along very well. Thank you.
Yeah, but you're doing well. And you usually don't hear of patients having 3 types of cancer all unrelated to each other in such a short time span. So tell us a little bit about that experience and how you really coped with that and how it sort of brought you into what you're doing now.
Yes, it was pretty unique. I've even done some genetic testing and had confirmed that none of these were related. And the genetic testing was helpful to give me a peace of mind for my 3 children and whether we would have to approach the any future testing for them differently. I can tell you the things that got me through this journey so far have just been the support of family and friends, a lot of prayers, my faith, and just staying positive and staying in a good place. I've been blessed. I've got a wonderful wife of 25 years that assisted me through every facet of this, going to the treatments, whatever was needed from a medical standpoint, friends and family, just simply running errands, getting kids to practices, games, whatever the case may be, and providing my family with meals throughout the treatment phase. A quick story, I'm a little bit particular about my landscaping, which I wasn't able to take care of during my treatment. We had 10 friends show up one day and spent 9 or 10 hours just taking care of my landscaping. It was ready for an HGTV show when done. But that experience just really kind of a turning point. It allowed me to accept some help that I was struggling with, and I know others struggle to allow people to assist them. So that was very key for me. With respect to my prayers and my faith, just a lot of people through my church at St. Rock's praying for us. They had a prayer service for me that they created these small books that were blank pages that people wrote prayers and notes of encouragement for me. So those prayers and those relationships really helped me keep in a good place and get to where I am today.
Mm-hmm. And it's the true meaning of a community.
It is, very much so.
Yes. And so, as we mentioned in your introductions, you have been a very successful business and tax attorney for nearly 25 years, but you've recently, you know, shifted your practice a little bit and started to offer services to others who are facing cancer. And I know we're going to dive a little deeper into, you know, specific services and what our listeners need to know as they think about preparing some of these very important documents. But can you just let us know what it is that you're doing for people?
Absolutely. One of the things that I realized that helped me through this cancer journey are the resources that I had. And it wasn't the financial resources, but it was the support resources, the second opinions that I was able to get through nursing relationships and family relationships, and being able to understand some of those treatment options that I had. I really wanted to become a resource for cancer patients, whether it was in the estate area, taxation, the different areas that I practice in professionally, or just being able to get them to a doctor, share my doctor, share my resources with them. So I've tried to extend my professional practice to become more of a resource for people, particularly with cancer, to get them answers that they need for that journey.
Mm-hmm. And by that, you're offering counseling and coaching and assistance with completing some of these very important tools.
Absolutely. Typically, we will have a meeting. Sometimes I have to do it by phone, depending on the health of the patients. But we're doing this work on a pro bono basis and sharing these resources to allow people to have access to the resources that financially may not be able to do that, whether it's doing the referral or actually preparing some of the professional service and just doing that on a pro bono basis.
Mm-hmm. That's remarkable. And we often hear cancer survivors say that it's really important for them to give back to others. Or, you know, in your quick story, it seems like you're helping to pay it forward a little bit, or to help others in the same way that your friends manicured your lawn for you, which was really important to you. And I just wondered if that was a bit of an inspiration to help you tip into this decision.
It was. You know, I've been blessed through my upbringing. Charity has been something that has been made important to myself, and it's important for my family. But it's typically been along the lines of food issues or poverty issues. My cancer experience has certainly focused my time and energy more on cancer patients and the challenges that they have. And I think having that cancer experience allows me to open up, share that with them, and truly pay it forward and help others that get through the journey understand what a blessing we've each had, and maybe help them pay it forward as well, whether it's through the Cancer Experience Registry that you guys provide. That's a great tool. Any way that we can find to pay it forward, we certainly try to.
Mm-hmm. And what was the reaction of your coworkers or your family and friends to your new, found work?
Been very positive. My staff, as well as myself, are very blessed, and they're excited about the pro bono services. We work very hard to be engaged with our clients on a daily basis, but it's just different. When someone's fighting for his or her life, it's just a different scenario, and to see the extra effort from my staff and them being excited about the pro bono efforts. And it's really kind of spilled over in our last staff meeting. We've talked about creating a charitable page on our website to let people know that we can help and we're willing to help, whether it's cancer-related, just even talking about some of the other pro bono services and charities that our staff's helping with. So it's been kind of contagious.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, and hopefully this show will help distribute the word even more for you moving forward. So we are going to take a quick commercial break. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Today's show is sponsored in part by Lilly Oncology and ASI. We will be right back when we'll hear more about Financial Planning 101, like we said in the beginning, from both Paul and from Clara, ways in which that you can cope and enter into these type of conversations with your friends and family. Join us right after this break.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The Cancer Support Community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the Cancer Support Community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355 or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
People living with breast cancer often find it difficult to ask for help, and many of the people in their lives want to help but don't know how. During National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Cancer Support Community is proud to support Meal Train, sponsored by Magnolia, which utilizes MealTrain.com, a free shared online calendar to streamline the process of giving and receiving meals for families coping with breast cancer. Help us reach our goal of 1,000 new breast cancer-specific meal trains this October. To learn more, visit mealtrain.com/MMT and enter the code MAGNOLIAB or visit us at cancersupportcommunity.org.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm your guest host today, Linda House, filling in for Kim Tibaldo, the CEO of the Cancer Support Community, who is off. We're here today with cancer survivor and attorney Paul Pittman and also program director of CSC's affiliate, Gilda's Club Kansas City, Clara Anderson Saint. We've been talking to Paul about his particular cancer experience and how both his cancer experience and his skill set in his work life have led him to offering a number of his services to other patients with cancer and their families free of charge. In this segment, I want to just dive into a little bit of the emotional side of financial planning and what it means to patients, what it means to their families, how best to start to engage in some of these conversations. And then into the third segment, maybe the end of this segment, really get into some of the nuts and bolts of what do the forms mean, how do you fill them out, how do you go about seeking assistance, you know, those sort of things. So, Paul, I wanted to just wrap up with you before we move to Clara. In the last segment, we talked about the services that you're offering kind of broadly. And, you know, can you just give us a little bit more insight into these particular services and why they are so important for people who have cancer and their families?
Yes. The first and primary service that I provide is the estate planning. To be able to specify the roles of the caregivers and the people that will be involved in your estate plan, whether there's a terminal illness or not, it's very important to get those people involved and to understand what their roles and expectations are. I also spend time discussing POST, which is the physician's order scope of treatment, to address the care for people. And I know we'll talk a little bit more detail about that later. Taxation, a lot of people don't think of taxation related to an illness, but it's very important because if there are tax effects about how medical treatment is paid for, and how is that financed? Is it financed from retirement accounts? Is it financed from lines of credits, savings accounts? So the taxation and financing play a big role in helping people get through this cancer journey. So I spend time with them trying to walk them through those aspects of it as well.
Mm-hmm. And so, Clara, let's bring you into this conversation now. So when you really talk about the emotional side of planning, and we heard, you know, Paul go into some of the services that he provides, it can be overwhelming. Just the terminology can be overwhelming, especially when you layer it into the new terminology of a cancer diagnosis. And I also know that even when we offer in our affiliates support groups on financial planning, or resourcing, that sort of thing, that people sort of shy away from that. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, the resistance that patients might feel about planning their estates, or what do you experience and how you might overcome some of those concerns?
Sure. You know, bringing up all of these topics, like you mentioned, there's some resistance and it just brings up lots of emotion. It kind of really forces people to start facing their mortality and what they would want their wishes to be for their family after they're no longer here. And one of the things we just discuss with people is not planning doesn't keep the end from happening. It just ensures that no one's prepared for it. So although this is pretty emotional, starting that process, or at very least the very basic conversation, will go a long way to assist all the family members in preparing all their particulars. And death, even expected ones, is not something that we're ever truly emotionally prepared for, but it does help the grief process having some logistics and estate decisions already made, so that's not something they're trying to do in the middle of all of the grief. But I think, you know, like you mentioned, the most common resistance is really just that fear in terms of having this conversation. So finding a place, or like Paul's service of receiving support and guidance in the process, I think is the most essential.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Paul, I thought I heard you say that this is really important for people, whether their cancer is curable or not, that they should be thinking about long-range planning, regardless of that particular scenario.
And that's correct. To be able to address the estate planning aspect and get some of these this stress off of your plate is very helpful. I find that because of my cancer experience, that I'm able to have open conversations with some of these clients, and they feel a little bit more at ease with me. I usually start off and kid them about us being in the cancer club together, that we certainly don't invite anybody to be there, but once you're in, you're in. And it lets their defenses down and puts them at ease, and we can kind of talk through my experience where it's appropriate when I feel like they're having trouble opening up and communicating with me, and I'll share as much of my experience as I think is helpful to them. But it really lets us get into the estate planning process and the other aspects of it because of my relationship with mm-hmm. them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's so important. We just saw a study that was released at the end of last week from a group doing some work on financial toxicity in Texas, where patients are saying that they feel more financially stressed. I'm sorry, they feel more distressed about their financial situation than they do about their health situation. So, you know, the more that we see those kind of studies come out, the more important that this work really, really becomes. And so I'm wondering, Clara, could you just share with us maybe some of the elements of these financial discussions that your patients and families have been most appreciative of, or that have been most helpful to them?
Yeah, I think, again, it's just, you know, having that safe place to get their questions answered or their fears explored. It's a very delicate conversation, and like you mentioned, there's all these logistics that people aren't even aware that they need to decide. Like, Paul's going to go into more detail about the actual documents, but sometimes people aren't even sure what it is that they need in terms of preparing their finances or even their end-of-life decisions. So we kind of just really try to inform them as much as possible, but give them that safe place to just ask those questions and explore what it is that they need answers to.
Mm-hmm. And Paul, have you found that the ability to relate to you as a cancer survivor has been one of the most beneficial pieces so far, or is there something else that people have really appreciated in the dialogue you've had with them?
It certainly helps being a cancer survivor, or working to be a cancer survivor, as I say to myself every day. But it does put them at ease. It does allow us to have good conversations. As Claire was saying, a lot of times we have to lay out to them questions that need to be answered. They don't understand the questions, particularly when you're overwhelmed and it's early on in a diagnosis, to be able to walk them through things that they need to think about, and to let them know that once we get this done, the stress that's going to be relieved from them. I mean, even my quote-unquote healthy clients are so thankful to have this estate planning work completed, and the caregivers as well, to be able to do this for someone that's facing cancer, certainly a stress reliever.
Mm-hmm. And Clara, can you speak a little bit about the families? And, you know, there are different family dynamics, regardless of whether you're well, healthy, married, not married. So when you think about, you know, moving into this particular space of estate planning and finances, you know, are there any sort of helpful hints or things that we should avoid or we should think about if we're thinking about starting to engage in this level of conversation with our families?
Well, I think it's just being aware of the dynamics that exist in your own family. You know, I've heard many stories of, you know, a strange family member or someone who lived out of the area, a distant member who swooped in at the end to kind of find out where the money fell. And each family might have that story or at least their own dynamics. So if you start to think about your family and start to prepare for what it will be like afterwards, you know, what is it that you need to decide on and how is it best to inform your family of your plan? And, you know, it's just that conversation of being as open and as honest. And, you know, I think it's the surprises that create the most charged situation. So even if it's, you know, a general conversation, just giving everyone a heads up, I think is the best place to start.
Mm-hmm. And is it easy for some to lean on a third party to help with that conversation?
Sure. You know, I think there's that instinctive emotional protection over each other. And, you know, you want to be able to leave everyone in a good financial position, but that just might not be where you're at. It might not be the means. You might not have that. So having someone else help decide what it is exactly that you can do to help your family, or are there other things that you could decide ahead of time that might help in the future?
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you for that. We are going to go to a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I really want to get into the nuts and the bolts of the learnings for our listeners and how they can begin to prepare. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. This episode is sponsored in part by Amgen Oncology and Bristol-Myers Squibb. We will be back shortly right after this break.
Cancer. It's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you, a breakaway from cancer. Created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The cancer support community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around two pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliffe Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive one delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the AZI Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia. Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliameals.com. Or call 617-733-5848.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, AZI, are committed to human health care, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
We're back with Frankly Speaking About Cancer, and I'm your guest host today, Linda House, the president of the Cancer Support Community, filling in today for Kim Thibodeau, the CEO, who is off today. We are joined by cancer survivor and attorney Paul Pittman and program director of Gilda's Club Kansas City, Clara Anderson Saint. We've been talking about the process of estate planning and other financial planning, and also sort of the emotional process of that as well. And for this next segment, as promised, we want to roll our sleeves up and get our hands dirty and really talk about the different documents that Paul has alluded to, and in particular, some of the things that you need to know about each of them and questions that you might want to ask as you are thinking about your own scenario around financial planning. And so, Paul, let's dig into some of the services that you've offered. And so far, you've given us a great sense of why we should, you know, be aware of these, why we should be considering them, and why it's so important to have them prepared regardless of your health status, in truth. Can you walk us through the process of estate planning first? What does it mean? What are the elements of it? Really, what do our listeners need to know, both as a patient and a caregiver, about estate planning?
Sure. The estate planning process is very fact-sensitive, so it is different for each family. There are some basic documents that are pertinent to virtually every estate plan, the first being the power of attorney relating to the assistance of finances for an individual. We can set those power of attorneys up with different flexible options so that their powers could be delegated within a document. We can set up the timing as to when a power of attorney takes effect, whether it takes effect immediately. If you're caring potentially for an elderly family member, we can have it take effect upon some future incapacity. So we can really customize the power of attorney document to fit the fact pattern of the individual family. The next document that we use is the healthcare power of attorney. It allows for health care decisions to be made by a third party when an individual can't make those health care decisions on their own. Both of those documents will have an individual, an attorney, in fact, or health care representative listed, and then it's often important to have backup successor in those documents as well. If we've got somebody that's traveling, God forbid somebody was in an accident together, we would like to have a backup care provider to be able to step in if that's necessary. The third document that we use is a living will. They are governed by state statutes, so they're different for each state, but they will go through and lay out the conditions that need to be met prior to the document becoming effective. They're very similar to a do not resuscitate order that most people are familiar with. And it will lay out whether hydration or nutrition is an option, if life belonging machinery is a request. Indiana statute specifically allows someone to choose those options, to not choose those options, or to leave that decision to the healthcare power of attorney. So again, we can customize those documents to the individual. Indiana requires that the living will be made part of your medical record, so we will send a copy of that to your treating physician to make it part of the medical record. And then the next two documents relate to the will and the trust will relate to the transfer of assets as well as some further appointments for a guardian. A guardian is there for someone to have an incapacity. Most of the time we think of these incapacities as just an age issue where we've got a minor involved, but it's important to have a guardian appointed for healthcare if we have a situation where we have to care for that individual, either from a financial standpoint or from a healthcare perspective. And then the will, as most people are familiar with, will also be there to transfer assets, whether it's to children, grandchildren, family members, friends, charitable organizations. So we will go through and discuss the asset transfers as well. Sometimes when we need specific guidance after we're gone, we will use a trust so that we can put conditions on how we want assets transferred to children or grandchildren, particularly if we've got a minor involved and we want to hold those assets to a later date until we've got a someone that's 25 or 30, whatever age preference the person setting up the trust wishes to use. So those are the primary documents that are used in most estate planning. When you have individuals that have more assets, then the estate planning can be more complicated and different gifting techniques can be used. But those documents are the five primary documents in most estate plans that will allow us to transfer wealth, transfer assets, and minimize any type of inheritance taxes that may exist at the state level or at the federal level. Speaking of taxes, that's the next area that we assist with. When you're looking at the taxes, I mentioned previously that often people don't think of taxes or financing with illnesses. When we have health savings accounts available or we're able to show clients how to utilize those, they're able to pay for some of these medical costs using pre-tax dollars. It will save them money and create additional money for this care. We'll look at insurance and what's deductible from an income tax perspective. We'll help them classify what kind of medical bills may be deductible, again, trying to reduce the tax impact of this illness and the financing concerns that you and Clara had spoke about previously. We will also get in and look at how are we going to finance this. If we use an IRA or some type of retirement vehicle, we may have to look to see if we've got an exception to avoid the tax. Or if there is going to be a tax liability, we'll have to determine how much we need to set aside and help them manage that cash flow when it comes to paying taxes. The last part of the financing that we spoke to is how do we pay for some of this care? Do we do it with assets that we have in savings accounts, checking accounts? That's not always sufficient. Sometimes we actually have to borrow money. We've helped clients go to the lender resources that we have and set up lines of credit. We've even helped some elderly clients set up reverse mortgages. Most of the time you have to be over 62 years of age to do a reverse mortgage, but it may be the way to get at equity in the home and use it to care for the medical needs that are there without creating some additional stress for the client. So those are the different areas that we sit down and try to help clients. We do some general consulting as well, but that's usually getting people to resources outside of the scope of what we do. We certainly don't try to advise in any type of medical capacity. We try to get them to people like Claire or treating physicians, if that may be the case, if it's outside the scope of what we do.
So I'm going to ask you one question, and I'm intentionally stalling in case our listeners want to grab something to write with, although certainly the benefit of this show is that we have it on tape, so individuals can go back and listen to it over and over and over again. But I'm going to ask you one question while we're having people grab a pen, and then I'm going to go through each of these documents just quickly, one by one by one, so that people have time to really write them down and maybe jot a note about what they represent. So when you mentioned the trust, you talk specifically about arranging for care for a minor. So someone under the age of 18, essentially. Would that also be applicable if you were caring for an adult parent or maybe an adult child who would have special needs? Would that still be the same arrangement?
Absolutely. The trust, many people fear the trust because they can become complicated and burdensome, but they allow for so many flexibilities. Typically, we will have a trustee in place that has some type of discretionary power. And most of the times that power is called a HIMSS standard: health, education, maintenance, and support. Those powers allow the trustee to have a lot of flexibility and to be able to care for the individual, whether it's an incapacitated adult, whether it's a child with special needs. Those trusts will work in that same capacity as it would for someone with a minor, giving the guardian discretionary powers to care for them. And then if you want, often we will put mandatory distribution ages out if we're not looking at an incapacity with an incompetent adult.
Great. Thank you for that. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to list what I thought I heard, the five documents. And if you can just give us a quick sentence of what each of those documents represents. I know that you've done this already, but I just want to make sure that we hammer these points. So the first one you mentioned is the power of attorney.
Correct. The power of attorney allows for someone to step in and help manage the personal finances of an individual.
The second one was a health care power of attorney.
The health care power of attorney allows an individual to step in and make health care decisions when someone's unable to do that for themselves, to get second opinions, to move to a different hospital, a different physician. It gives you those abilities to gather information to help make health care decisions on behalf of someone.
The third one, living will.
The living will helps provide guidance to family and a treating physician that once a terminal condition is established and established in writing, whether an individual would want life-prolonging measures applied to his or her life.
The fourth one is the will. I don't want to say the regular will, but a will.
Yes, a last will and testament is often how it's referred to. The importance, again, is typically appointing a guardian to help with any type of incapacity that the person's will it is for, and then also to allow for the transfer of assets to friends, family, and charities.
And the last one you said was a trust.
Correct. The trust is a vehicle that is used to hold assets and to allow the trustee to disperse those assets based on the directions of the settlor, the person setting up the trust. And it can be used for health, education, maintenance, support, whatever criteria the individual setting the trust up chooses.
And then I just wanted to repeat additional information that I thought was really important. You raised the point that individuals should raise other points of conversation with their attorney or their family, and those are around taxes, both in terms of using pre-tax dollars in a healthcare savings account to pay for care. Also, you mentioned that there may be items that could be deductible. So when they're doing their taxes at the end of the year, there might be medical-related expenses that could be deducted. And then also additional financial planning. Correct?
That is correct. The health, the deductibility of expenses, the way the tax code's currently set up, many of us on a year-to-year basis do not keep track of our medical expenses because most of the time they're not deductible. I always urge clients to keep track of those medical bills. We never know when we might have a major illness that comes up. If it comes up in September or October and we have surgeries or some type of accident and we haven't kept track of those expenses during the first part of the year, there may be deductions that are lost. So keep track of them all year long. Keep them in a folder. And if it's something that we need to review come tax time, we'll have all the information available to take advantage of those bills that are deductible.
Great. Thank you. And then I also heard you talk about alternative ways to pay for care, such as a reverse mortgage. And we have about 1 minute left before we go to break. I'm just wondering if you could just give us a snapshot into what is a reverse mortgage, just quickly.
Yes. A reverse mortgage takes the equity of a home. If we've got a $100,000 home, the lender will loan typically about 80% of that. You receive all of those proceeds at one time, so you would have $80,000 in my example. There are no payments for that money. It is yours. You do retain the ownership of the house, and when you die, depending on whether there's any equity in the property, you can retain that house, or if there's not any equity, you can just simply turn it over to the lender. So it allows you to use the equity in the house without ever having to make a future payment with respect to those borrowed funds.
Great. Thank you for that. That's really helpful. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I'd like to start by talking a little bit about the family's role in some of these conversations and some of your other recommendations in terms of seeking legal help. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Today's show is sponsored in part by Takeda Oncology and Genentech. We will return with our final segment right after this break.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The Cancer Support Community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the Cancer Support Community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355 or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Eisai, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
Cancer. It's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm your guest host today, Linda House, the president of the Cancer Support Community, filling in for our CEO, Kim Tibaldo, who is off today. We are coming up on our last segment here, and this has been such a helpful show. Paul and Claire, I can't even begin to tell you how much I appreciate having you here to help with this really important topic. Paul, our last segment focused on specifics. We were very specific around five documents, other helpful hints around taxes and financial planning. I had one question sort of remaining from, you know, that particular topic, and it is around the family. And we talked a little bit about some of the psychosocial pieces, and I know that we'll get into that again in just a second with Clara, but I'm wondering if there are any sort of legal considerations for the family, especially in situations where there may be shared assets like a home.
Yes. I mean, walking through the five documents that we discussed, I kind of break them up into two categories: the power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, and living will, and as it relates to the guardianship as well. I really try to have the caregivers and other family members involved in those decisions to understand the roles, to understand the expectations, when they might be required to act, and also talk through with my clients as to the practical side to this. You have to consider age. You have to consider the geographics. I had a client that wanted a parent to be a guardian of a child that lives in Alaska, and the family's here in Indiana. And obviously there's a trust relationship there, but it's just very impractical for that to take place with that type of distance. So we try to talk through the practical sides on those documents and help the clients understand how those decisions and who's involved in those will affect those individuals. The wills and the trust are a little bit different. We try to separate those, particularly when it comes to assets. We help the clients walk through and understand when they're trying to leave assets, how that will work, whether assets will pass directly to an individual, well, it will pass through the will, because we can, through the titling of assets, do a lot of the planning inside and outside of the will. So understanding how quickly we can get an asset to an individual, again, what's the tax consequences of getting that asset to the individual. And we try to keep that a little bit more confidential. I don't want clients to often share how assets are going to be delivered to a family member or a friend and then feel like they can't change those or have to explain later. We do feel it's very important to have the individual know when they're being involved in a power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, or guardianship role, but maybe not that same information share when it comes to wills and trust.
Great. Thank you. And Claire, I just want you to jump in here because I know that that you see a number of these situations and that different family situations do play a big role in some of the decisions patients make. So what is your advice to patients when they come to you and what are some of the different scenarios that you've had to work through?
Well, like we mentioned earlier, there's dynamics kind of at play in each family situation. I think a special consideration is, you know, families that are in their second marriage or have children from different spouses. And again, with that, it's just kind of talking through and initiating that family conversation. But really just, you know, talking to the current spouse about goals and what extent they want to leave assets to the children. But I think one of the things that often gets missed is reviewing plans from previous marriage. I had a situation where someone hadn't reviewed their plan and they didn't change the right documents and ended up leaving everything to their ex-spouse. So it's one of those things where you kind of need to review this on a, you know, annual or every few year basis. And also there's the other dynamic of, you know, what happens if there's an estranged family member and how do you account for them? But usually it's just that, like Paul's already talked about, there's considerations, you know, legally in terms of trust or, you know, putting in the will, you know, how you want that to be handled. And if there needs to be, you know, someone to help that loved one in the inheritance part or if, you know, certain things need to be achieved. But it's really just having those conversations and knowing your own family dynamics and just helping prepare everybody, like Paul's already mentioned, keeping everyone on the same page.
Well, I think it's important to remember that this is a service that the CSC network, which includes Gilda's clubs throughout the United States, can help with. And you might speak a little bit to, you know, whether that's done in a group setting or if it's done one-on-one or if it's done in both type of settings. And we know that this is a service that's provided also free of charge to patients and their families. Can you just expand upon that a little bit?
Sure. You know, we have educational events every calendar series, and sometimes it's on these topics specifically. So that's always something that's asked upon. Or if it's not necessarily the estate or financial piece, but end-of-life paperwork, like he's talked about, who do I want my, you know, durable power of attorney to be? What do I want my end-of-life wishes to be? Depending on your state, there's the five wishes document or the caring conversations where it kind of just explores how to make those healthcare wishes known to your family. So, yes, that is done, you know, either in our support groups. I know coming up in October, we're having a panel on the caring conversations booklet, which is what we do here in Missouri.
Mm-hmm. And so if people don't see it on your calendars or on calendars in their affiliate area, they should just pick up the phone and either call you or call the National Helpline, and we'll definitely get them connected to someone who can help them start to have these type of conversations.
Absolutely. That's, you know, part of the ability with our affiliate network is that resource and referral, and any need that there is, we can help navigate the system for them.
Great. Paul, I'm going to bring you in. We've got about 2 minutes of all the incredible information that we've covered here today. Is there anything that we've either left off the table or you'd like to clarify a little more you want to leave our listeners with?
Just a couple of things. One, Claire touched briefly upon it. if most of the time there isn't, although these services are free, most of the time people are doing these services for family members and there isn't a charge. But occasionally a caregiver will expect there to be some type of compensation. So they really need to make sure that that's in writing, it's defined what the wages might be and what the scope of the work will do. It will save from there being family problems down the road. Just a couple of final tips. One that was shared by my mother to me that I think it's important for people. We need to give when we can give, and we need to take when we need to take. And people can't be afraid to ask for help, particularly when they have an illness that they're fighting through on it. And one last thing, one of the hardest things that I learned in my journey is that once the treatment phase is over, everybody feels like you're a cancer survivor. People need to understand that it's a tough transition once the treatment phase is over, and it's difficult when you're getting back to what is now your new life. There are resources out there that both of you guys have made aware to the public, and we need to understand that we need to be a little bit patient with ourselves as we're working to get back and continue to be a cancer survivor. None of us know what God's plan is for us, so I would just tell everybody, make sure they really enjoy life, live in the present, and find somebody to laugh with.
Great. Thank you for closing us on those words, Paul. Very powerful. Paul and Clara, thank you so much for joining us today, sharing your stories and your experiences. This could be such a complex and difficult topic, but you were both really helpful in shedding a lot of light and great information on this. Thank you, Paul, for also sharing your cancer experience with us today. I know that means a lot to our listeners, especially those who are looking for someone for hope and understanding. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us today for Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Again, I was your guest host and very proud to be able to stand in for Kim Thibodeau, the CEO of the Cancer Support Community. The Cancer Support Community provides a multitude of in-person, online, and over-the-phone support. If you or someone you know is faced with a cancer diagnosis, you do not have to do it alone. Listen to the advice of Paul's very wise mother. For more information about our programs, visit us at www.cancersupportcommunity.org to find a location near you, which includes our Gildas Club's affiliates. Our toll-free helpline is available to you also at 888-793-9355, where you can speak with a licensed mental health professional Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Until next time, be well, do well, live well.
Thank you for joining us for Frankly Speaking About Cancer with your host, Kim Thibodeau. We're here for you every Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. In the meantime, stay connected online at cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org.